welcome back into another episode of the 100 Year Podcast. My name is Adario Strange, and this week we have back with us Rahul Sood, the founder, co-founder, and CEO of Irreverent Labs. Rahul, how are you?
Good. How you doing, Adario?
Great. We got to hang out in person. I guess that was like a week ago here in New York.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yep. I give I have a surprise question for you.
Sure.
Did you lose the book that I gave you as a gift when we hung out? Did you lose it? So people listening, I gave him a copy of Guns, Germs, and Steel, a book that I found out about years ago. But I just bought a new copy, and I figured Rahul, based on his various interests, he would like a copy. Do you have it? Or is it somewhere?
It's sitting on my bedside, to be honest.
Okay. All right. Awesome. Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. Well, how'd you find New York? I'm just curious. Like every time you come to New York, particularly because you live, you know, you're based in Bellevue and it's so different. I always kind of like want kind of like your update on like how the city looks here from your vantage.
Yeah, no, I thought it was, great. It was extra hot, this time of year. And, I think it's bustling again. It's like the pandemic never happened. Now granted, this is before the world started on fire again this week. And, but New York was great as always.
Okay. All right. Well, speaking of New York, the home of the United Nations, the UN, we're kind of right now kind of in the middle of, an international crisis, in the Middle East. Israel and the Palestinian, nation, Palestine. And there was a major, incident, I guess last week now, and things have basically heated up. And we actually had, someone on our guest list, who's an AI startup company whose company is actually based in Israel. And that led me to kind of like circle back and think about all of the people, all the founders that I've spoken to in the last few years who are based in Israel or either based in Israel. A lot of founders, what they'll do is they'll have a satellite office. They'll be based in Israel and then they'll put another office in either Silicon Valley or maybe Seattle, and in some cases, even Austin. And then I kind of like looked up the information and there's actually a survey that actually revealed that Israel is the fourth largest startup hub for artificial intelligence, both in terms of number of companies and funding. And they're only behind the US, China, and I think it's the UK. And I think they're ahead of Canada and France and Japan. And so for such a tiny nation to be at the head of AI, I thought, okay, well, this is all happening and we're not a political show, but it is worth noting that since this is happening and it's and actually some founders are being called into service, into military service, and this is one of the major hubs of AI now. I thought it was like worth at least mentioning kind of Israel's role in artificial intelligence. I mean, have you been tracking this at all?
Oh yeah, definitely. So when I used to run Microsoft Ventures with David, we had an accelerator out in Israel that was, you know, one of the top performing accelerators in the world, but not to mention the, every accelerator is different based on the people, but Israel at the time, there was like 7 million people, in Israel, many of them entrepreneurs, very, very entrepreneurial culture. And one of the biggest strengths of the Israel startup ecosystem was ML. They were very, very deep in machine learning, back then. And, I assume it's from defense and other things that they build. So it's no surprise that AI is sort of a big thing for Israel. And yeah, the people are super talented there. I was speaking to our head of the accelerator there the other day just to see how he's doing. And, this is a very complicated and very, disturbing, situation. That's all I can say. Yeah.
Yeah. And, two things. Israel first really came on my personal radar a few years ago as I was reporting on AR and VR, because there are also a huge number of computer vision companies based out of Israel. And that makes me also think of a previous guest on the 100 Year Podcast, Roni Abovitz, who I'm pretty sure, if memory serves, he has some pretty personal ties to Israel. So, it's It's unfortunate what's happening. You know, I'm not qualified, and I don't know what your stance is. I mean, you kind of said your stance, but I'm not really qualified to get too much into the nuance. But at least from a technical, you know, a technology innovation standpoint, it's an important location. And this
Israel has, you know, some of the, well, I mean, the largest companies in the world have hubs in Israel. You know, the software talent there is very, very high. And I mean, that aside, like, I think what we saw was an outright act of terror. That's horrible. It shouldn't happen anywhere. You know, and now we're sort of at a point where, that act of terror has led to, you know, a war that's unfortunate because you're dealing with a population of people that have been indoctrinated, you know, by religion and other things at a very young age. I was watching a video today of a kid that was captured there, in, you know, one of the terrorists that was captured in Israel. And he's like Amr's age. He's 22 years old, you know? So this kid,
your son, for those who don't
know. Yeah. He was born in 2002, you know, and he's got so much hate in him. And, you know, and this hate is something that Israel, I remember when I went there, I've been there a few times, and I went there once, and Zach said to me, you know, imagine living in a country where everyone around you wants to kill you. Like, I just can't imagine. And, you know, unfortunately now what we have is a very complicated situation where, you know, innocent people are dying as a result of, you know, this terror attack, right? And, innocent people on both sides. So, you know, I guess we'll see what happens, but, you know, I think if it happened here, if anything close like that happened here, you know what would happen. So I don't know. But with that being said, you know, the technology, I do think, you know, Israel has some of the best tech in the world. And, you know, one thing that I would say is, like, when this all settles down, people should ask questions to find out how this happened in the first place. You know, how did, like, I remember traveling there and I was stuck at the border for 8 hours. You know, they're asking questions and they're going through my, you know, details and that sort of thing. And, you know, I remember how tight the border control is there. You know, how do people fly in on paragliders with guns? Like, you know, that whole thing is just wild to me, you know. And, you know, they say that, you know, the Israel border is so tight, you can spot a cockroach going over the border. So I just don't know how it happened. And all I can say is I think people just probably want to ask questions, you know, at some point. And I wish, you know, all the innocent, you know, as well, you know, well, and I pray for peace. That's it. I just want peace.
Yeah, I think that's the sentiment for a lot of people. They're thinking about the innocent people caught in the crossfire and the idea of peace in a region that's been in conflict for decades. But not to kind of, you know, just, you know, okay, let's now move forward. But, you know, the reason I brought it up was the technology. And I'm curious, like, from your vantage point, having worked with so many founders and you know, technologists from Israel, can you explain, or do you have any kind of insight or guess as to why such a small country would be number four in terms of, like, one of the biggest?
I'm actually
AI
surprised
hubs?
It's not higher, to be honest. You know, I think because they were very high with ML. You know, I mean, like, as an example, Waze was one of the companies at the time that was you know, up and coming from Israel, a startup that, as you know, was had a big investment from Microsoft, and then Google eventually acquired them. And there's tons of companies, and I think it's because of defense. I really think it's because Israel focused a ton in, you know, in training engineers so that they could build software and systems for the defense industry. And the discipline there is it's unbelievable. Like, their husband and wife teams would quit their jobs to become entrepreneurs back when I was running Microsoft Ventures. So when you see that, and you're talking about a country that has a population of 7 million people, but they have such a massive global impact, you know, through the Israelis that live around the world, and just not to mention the fact that they just make such a huge impact there. So they punch way beyond their weight when it comes to tech.
All right. Well, not to, you know, move on too quickly, but I think that's the scope of kind of our insight into it. I personally this has all prompted me to kind of like, I don't know, I'm incentivized now to learn more about the history of what's happened in the region. And I have so many close friends from that area, lifelong friends, both professionally and personally. So this has kind of incentivized me to like just educate myself more on what's going on there. And, you know, as you said, I pray for peace in general in terms of what's happening there. In terms of current events, did you get a chance to see the Meta Connect conference? I'm curious.
I did. So what I really honed in on was the Ray-Ban glasses. So I ordered those. And then of course I saw the Lex Fridman interview with Zuck afterwards, which blew my mind. And just kind of like some of the updates on their hardware, but I really didn't get into the differences between their new Oculus 3. What's it called?
Right. Oculus. Yeah. So that's actually the entry point that I wanted to focus on, the Oculus 3 or the Quest 3. Not Oculus.
Yeah. So I didn't understand the difference between the Quest 3 and the one that I have, the Pro. The Pro is still the more expensive one or whatever. It's the one they were using in the Lex Fridman interview. I still use the Pro almost every second day, if not every day. So I use it all the time. I'll go upstairs and use it again because I use it for work. And I use Immersed, which allows me to have multiple screens in an environment that I want. And I find my productivity is much higher when I use that thing. So I really like it still. What's the difference?
So I have, for those who are not watching, just listening, I'm holding up the Quest 3. I have it. I got the Elite strap, so my neck doesn't get strained or whatever. I got the nice little foam insert. I love it. The form factor seems to be slightly smaller, but the weight is about the same. But the weight distribution is different. It's a wider field of view, a noticeable wider field of view. The resolution is higher. And then everyone's talking about the pass-through, which is a significant upgrade. If you look at the Quest 2, you know, it's black and white. It's very grainy. It's pretty much useless beyond just, okay, I know that I'm not standing next to a chair or something. But with the new pass-through, it's amazing. It looks almost like close to real, you know, like you're just looking through a lens. And they have like the effect is almost like an Instagram kind of warm. It makes everything look richer. So in that respect, and actually they even have a couple of mixed reality games, or at least one big one embedded in the actual system now. And I played it. And I have to tell you, speaking of Roni Abovitz and Magic Leap, it reminded me of Dr. Grordbart's the experience on the Magic Leap, which is like a higher end, AR mixed reality device that maps your room or maps your space and allows you to kind of like basically transform your reality around you. They did this on the Quest 3 and it is stunning. They have new controllers, which are, I've tested the Quest Pro, but I don't own it. I think these are kind of similar, right, to the Quest
right,
Pro
yeah,
a little
yeah.
bit.
Yeah. Same idea.
So the controllers are lighter. You no longer have that ring that would often kind of like you'd smash your hands together sometimes when playing games. It's just overall a more smooth experience. And the setup, I think, is the key for the Quest and, the versions before it, the Quest 2 and the versions before it. Setup for a new VR user was kind of wonky. It involved a lot of weird steps. The new Quest 3 setup process is seamless, and I can easily see this quickly, like rapidly bringing a lot more people into the VR space. So one of the things that made me think about this is because it's essentially the Quest 3. I mean, the main use case is VR, but this is a mixed reality device. And I'm curious, like the Apple Vision Pro isn't even out yet, but yeah. I think this is, and while the Vision Pro is, $3,500, really high priced. I mean, do you think this is almost like a worthy response as a mixed reality device in terms of mainstreaming VR and mixed reality?
I don't know. I mean, it's probably like a good entry. So as I understand, it's got a higher resolution than the Quest Pro, but it's not the open sort of feel, I guess, which, it's like tight on your face. I think Apple is just going to really light it up with software and you know, the hand controlling, no controllers is a big deal. So I think Apple is going to just completely change the you know, the paradigm from, say, VR experiences to truly spatial computing. And that's where things will get interesting. So, yeah, I'm still buying the Apple Pro for sure, the Vision Pro.
And you mentioned the Lex Fridman interview with Zuckerberg that was like two virtual avatars. I think it's important to know for people kind of like who aren't in the space, you know, haven't played with a lot of these devices, that was not anything that you can actually do now on the Quest Pro or the Quest 3. That was like a special setup that they had just
interview. Right, they had to fly to Pittsburgh to get that Kodak done, exactly.
But it's a tantalizing look at the future.
Yeah, and the Apple one, basically, they're saying that you'll be able to do it with the cameras on the device itself, which is pretty amazing. You know, something similar, maybe not full body and whatever, but if they can do that with that hardware, imagine what you can do with a smartphone and, you know, really good software. So I'm certain that Apple's going to do something that will, you know, be a massive step forward, and Meta's going to have to keep up. But yeah. I still love my Quest Pro though. Like
you're devoted. But I think you're right. The advantage for Apple is the software ecosystem.
Yeah.
It's going to be really hard for Meta to compete on that level. However, you did bring up the Ray-Ban stories update. And so I wanted to, first of all,
Tell me those are the new ones. Cause if they are, I'm gonna...
No, these are the ones I've been wearing for 2 years. Yeah. I should have lied. I should have said these are the new ones. No, these are the ones I've been wearing for 2 years. The vast majority of people who see me in these have no idea I'm wearing smart glasses. Yeah. The glasses just told me that my battery is at 90%. So these allow me, for those who can't see, listening via audio, I'm wearing a pair of Ray-Ban shades. They look indistinguishable from regular Ray-Ban shades. They play music. There's like a touch control on the side of the bar, the arm, you know, that wraps around your ear. I can take video up to 1 minute, photos. I can take calls. There's a voice interface. It allows you to, well, previously you would say, hey, Facebook, blah, 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 you know, do blah, blah, blah. Now you can say, hey, Meta. And so now I want to ask you a few questions about the next generation, which is coming. I've ordered my pair too, and I think they're coming next week. I think they're supposed to be delivered. The big deal for me, there are two big deals. One, you can now stream live on Instagram with these, which I don't know if I said this in a previous episode, but I've definitely written about this. The thing that I always wondered was why Meta/Facebook didn't launch these as an offshoot of Instagram. Instagram is the cool kid within their app family. And Instagram is the obvious co-branding choice with a Ray-Ban that you'd want for camera glasses. And for some reason, they insisted on branding it Facebook with Ray-Ban. So now they're allowing you to do live streaming on Instagram, which is going to be insane for, you know, vloggers, and content creators. But the big deal for me, and this is the huge thing, is that Meta AI will be embedded in these smart glasses. According to Zuckerberg didn't give an exact date for when this software, you know, will be rolled out, but he's indicating that it will be available just in the US initially for the second generation of the smart glasses. And you'll be able to this is what he said in the presentation. He said, you know, via the camera glasses and an embedded AI assistant, and there's an app for those who don't know, who haven't used this. You have the smart glasses, and then you also have to have an app on your phone. You need an app. It's called, I think it's Connect. It might be Facebook Connect. But basically, it's the app on your smartphone, and then it's the smart glasses. And he's saying for the next generation, you'll be able to say things like, what is that store over there? Or, hey, you know, you can basically just ask almost any generative AI question you might to, you know, a tool, you know, using a tool like ChatGPT. Thoughts on first of all, what inspired you to buy this version and not the previous version? I'm very curious about that.
Well, the AI integration obviously was something that I found, you know, interesting. like being able to ask it questions while you're on the go is interesting. And I just thought like the second generation, I saw the first generation, they look cool. I thought the second generation might be better. The audio is probably better. The cameras are better. So I just thought it was the time to get it. And I'm getting prescription glasses on it. So,
yeah. Well, it's funny you mentioned that. That was going to be my next point. So, like I said, I've been wearing these for almost 2 years now. And one of my pet peeves, you know, as someone who used to work in the music industry and I've worked in the entertainment industry for many years, I've always hated when people are inside a, you know, club venue or a bar wearing shades at night. I've always hated this. But I've become one of those people because I now, these are my security blanket, these smart glasses, because people don't understand, like, I don't actually, you can tap a button on the sidearm to take a picture or a video, but you can also just say it verbally. You can just, you know, have your hands at your side, have a drink in your hand and just verbally start recording. And this has become like almost like a security blanket for me. It's like, it's if Google Glass wasn't creepy and didn't scream, you know, super nerd, but it was still basically just as creepy because you can like take all these videos. And so I generally tell people, like 99% of the time, I tell people if I'm going to take a picture or record, but they've just become comfortable. And so I realize that people are kind of like, well, you know, why is this guy wearing shades at night? So actually, I have no vision problems, but I actually went to the optometrist earlier this year. I think it was February, specifically to get a prescription pair of these Ray-Ban Stories so I could wear clear versions. So I could still have my little safety blanket. My, you know, I love these things now, but have clear lenses and not, you know, freak anybody out. Turns out my vision's amazing, so I don't need prescription glasses. So now I'm still creeping people out. But
how's the battery, by the way? How's the battery and like the camera and all that stuff?
I have rarely run out of battery life. The only time I have any issue is if I come home, you know, and let's say I've used them 2 days in a row. And let's say on that second day, I don't put them back in their charging case, in its charging case. Then, you know, I might have to leave them home because it's not charged up or whatever. But generally, in terms of like wearing them throughout the day, just like a full day, zero problems. This is easily one of my favorite tech products ever. And I can't believe, like, I've seen a few people wearing them, but I can't believe I don't see more people wearing them. The idea that now that you're going to have Meta AI embedded reminds me of kind of Amazon's first attempt. They had the Amazon Echo Frames, and I have a pair here. And they used, the Alexa smart assistant embedded in those frames. Those glasses didn't take pictures, so they were less useful. But they
Alexa just woke up, by the way, when you said that.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was wondering what the hell that was. Sorry. Yeah, I forgot protocol. Everyone always tells you to watch for that. But yeah, that, you know, Amazon's assistant was embedded in is embedded in those smart glasses, but they don't take photos. So it's kind of it's not. And they're also not Ray-Ban. Ray-Ban, you know, come on, Ray-Ban's the classic. People love Ray-Ban.
What makes you think, by the way, next week?
I feel like I remember seeing October 17th.
What I saw October 17th was prescriptions available. I didn't see it.
Oh, maybe that was it. You could be right. Yeah. That might
be it. But that's all right.
We'll
cool.
So anyway, so I will now remove my creepy smart glasses that I love and wear all the time. If you've ever seen me in public, I've definitely been wearing those glasses.
I just mm-hmm. got the notification. Yeah, Tuesday, October 24th is when they're coming in.
There you go. What is that, like a week and a half? What is that?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, a week and a couple of days. So speaking of AI hardware, I wanted to get into this new category that has emerged suddenly, which is the dawn of AI pendants, that is devices, small hardware devices that you can wear on your person, generally on your chest, and you can use as kind of like a way station into an AI model, a generative AI model. Now, there are three that just kind of emerged. One from this, I think he's actually from your area, from the Seattle/Washington area. I think his name is Avi Schiffman, and he debuted something that he's trying to create called MyTab. And it's basically like a little small He says it's like the size of two Apple AirTags stacked together. And he did a demo, posted it on Twitter, and basically
yeah, you can see him wearing it on his neck.
Yeah, and it's him basically just interacting with it, asking it questions. And I think he was like pre-orders were $600, and I think the limit, I could be wrong, it was either 100 or 500. I can't remember, but whatever the number available sold out immediately, even though yeah. You know, it's like, I think the guy's 20, no long history, $600, yeah. Which is kind of a lot for an unproven device, but he sold out. So that happened. And then the next day, and I think kind of more like the kind of insider tech community knew about this, but then the next day, a previous guest on the 100 Year Podcast, Rewind, announced their own AI pendant.
Right.
And that is significantly less. I think it's something like $30 maybe. And, you know, he didn't really do a demo like Avi. The render was really just a render. You know, we don't actually see any hardware. But yeah. He's indicating that his device will be available soon. And then the last one is something that's been hyped up for, I'm going to say almost 2 years, and it's called Humane. And it's a company that, it's interesting, they have shifted to a focus on AI, but I found out about them originally because they were talking about augmented reality, which was kind of like one of my main focuses in recent years. And he was talking, well, the company was hinting that it was going to be some sort of innovative new kind of AR experience. And mm-hmm. In demos, I think he did a TED talk, in demos, you see him interacting with this pendant that basically, I think, shines kind of like a, you know, like a display of information on his hand.
Yeah, it's like a Pico projector, you know.
Basically, yeah. Part. Yeah, I have to be honest. I wasn't that impressed. But now he's kind of, they've rebranded and they're kind of really pushing the AI angle. So
how did they rebrand? It's still called Humane, isn't it? Or
well, when I say rebrand, I guess they've rebranded their messaging. Because okay. Before, like a lot of people haven't heard about Humane until whatever, the last 6-9 months. I've been aware of Humane for a very long time, and they were constantly banging on this whole AR mixed reality thing. And the AI thing didn't really come up as a strong selling point until recently. So those are the three players. I'm curious. I think I know what you think about at least one of them. But I'm curious what you think about this whole category. Like, is this something we need?
I mean, you know, I think the idea is that you have something that you remember or that you can recall information or whatever by asking it, hey, what did I talk about with this guy at lunch or whatever?
Well, that's the rewind device. That's just the rewind device.
No, but even the first one, the one from Avi, same idea.
Right, like, right, right. It's supposed to train a model based on your, right, on your habits, correct, right.
Yeah,
right, right.
Yeah. I think if you know, for recalling conversations and stuff, it's interesting. I just don't know that I could trust, you know, anyone with that information. You know, like, I don't want people listening in on my discussions. But I have Alexa here, which, you know, again, it's going to wake up. I got Google, whatever, and I tend to trust Amazon and Google and Microsoft. I don't know how I feel about trusting a small AI company at this point with my personal data. And I know that sounds weird, but but it is what it is. Like, you know, the large companies have systems in place and security in place to protect your data. And these small to mid companies just don't put a hard focus on that. So I worry about that part. Do people need it? I mean, sure, why not? I think it's pretty cool. I think it might actually be a winning category in many ways. Look, we're getting these Meta glasses. I'm sure you could do the same sort of shit with it, right? Like, hey, Meta, tell me what happened at noon today. I'm sure that's going to be part of it because they're building this AI into it. So we'll already have it.
Right. Yeah, that was kind of, no, I agree. That was kind of my confusion, but even more so in that most of us carry around smartphones. So I was just thinking, so I don't understand the need for an independent pendant, either around my neck or clipped to my chest, to do something I can do on my smartphone. Are they trying to eliminate the effort involved in lifting like my smartphone? Like, what's the
Maybe it's like a battery life thing as well, right? Mm. So it could be
ambient
issue, battery life. Leaving the app open on your phone is probably not possible with Apple. So when you have like a single use device that all it does is capture your voice and when you speak and puts it in a, you know, uploads it somewhere, maybe that takes a lot less battery. Sort of like the Aura Ring, you know, why would I have this when I have a phone or a watch or whatever? You know, I can wear this for 4 or 5 days, but then again, I can wear my Apple Watch Ultra now for 4 days without charging it. So I don't know.
That also like, you know, tracks your heart rate, your pulse.
Yeah.
There's a reason for you to actually wear that. You can't do that really on your iPhone really. What about the Humane device? I'm curious, like, have you...
Yeah, I saw it when it first came out. I saw the demo. I feel like they never should have done that demo because it really took the wind out of their sails. The demo is terrible.
Right.
You know, and they put a ton of money into that company. So, yeah, I hope they do. I hope they come out, you know, on top somehow because they have some really good talented people. But I'm just not sure. I just don't see the problem they're trying to solve.
Exactly. You know? What's the problem you're trying to solve that we don't already have with either our smartphone or something like the Ray-Ban Stories?
Look at my phone on my hand with like low grade text. You know, I love my phone. I love looking at, you know, the device and high quality text and photos and camera and all that stuff. I don't mind holding this up. Do you? Like, it's not a big deal.
Yeah. Somehow the whole beaming information onto my hand from a pendant seems like some sort of like low grade retro science fiction movie that,
right. You know, like you're taking a step that's not necessary. So I feel like anything we do with AI should be about removing steps.
Interesting. So let's stick to AI hardware for a second. A report recently came out that Sam Altman, CEO of OpenAI, is in talks or has been in talks with Johnny Ive, the former product designer behind some of Apple's biggest, most successful products. And they are apparently, this is, you know, all kind of like in play, but based on reports, funded possibly to the tune of $1 billion from Masayoshi Son. Masayoshi Son, the founder of SoftBank in Japan, one of the biggest players in terms of investments internationally. People don't really know exactly what they're thinking of building, but the first thought is some sort of phone, some sort of mobile device like a phone. Is this exciting to you? Do you have any, have you already thought of kind of like what this might be?
I mean, listen, I have no idea what it might be, but I can't imagine Johnny Ives is going to leave Apple to go build another phone. But I could imagine it being some sort of device that you, a super simple device that you carry with you, and it becomes a part of your everyday life. And that could be a number of things. It could be a piece of jewelry. It could be glasses. It could be anything, I suppose. But it's interesting. Like the way that SoftBank works on a deal like that, they'll invest the money. They'll take a vast majority of the company. But when you have somebody like Johnny Ives as the head of it, attracting talent and and getting the right people in place won't be hard. So I don't know. We'll see. Could be rumors or it could be real.
I mean, when I heard just the two Altman, Sam Altman and Johnny Ive name come up, maybe a rumor, but when I heard Masayoshi Son in the mix, I thought, okay, something is brewing. Maybe there's a mixed message. Maybe the information got mixed in transit, because there's also talk of OpenAI possibly creating their own chips. Are you aware of this? As someone, I know you spend a lot of time thinking about chips for AI use cases. Have you heard about this, like their possible dive into the chip space?
No, but it doesn't surprise me. I mean, the cost of computers is excessively high. They're probably making an investment somewhere, you know, in a company that creates something that competes with NVIDIA somehow, and that could be it. But it doesn't surprise me at all. They have the money, so yeah.
I mean, I don't want to get too deep into kind of reading the tea leaves, but, you know, Johnny Ive and Steve Jobs were kind of like a partnership to some degree in terms of innovation and releasing new products. And when I think everyone thought it was just a matter of time before he left Apple and, you know, kind of like retired to his kind of, I guess, you know, hobbies. But I think AI is exciting enough to draw him back into the fray. I would not be surprised if something significant comes out of a partnership between Ive and OpenAI.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah, you know, I could be wrong, but I just, Johnny Ive is just, he's been extremely impactful over the years. So I wouldn't bet against something exciting coming out of that. Let's go back to MetaConnect for a second. We often talk about mainstreaming AI and kind of like how you get the average user kind of to, I guess, engage with the technology in a way that's A, not creepy, and B, just seamless, like an easy entry point. So during MetaConnect, Mark Zuckerberg released a new set of AI chatbots, but he did something very interesting. He used a bunch of celebrities as basically avatars, and he gave them different names, which is a point, the name thing, I want to kind of harp on that point a little bit later, but he had everyone from, let's see, Snoop Dogg, Tom Brady, Jenner, what's the Kardashian name?
Kendall.
Kendall Jenner. He had Israel Adesanya, the UFC star. He had Naomi Osaka, the tennis star. He had a bunch of like really top tier. Oh, he had Mr. Beast, the YouTuber. He had like a really, I think you're on mute. I don't hear, you're on mute.
Yeah, no, and then he gave them like fake names like Gru as Tom Brady, and yeah, it's pretty funny actually. So their AI alter ego of themselves is like a totally different character, but it's exactly them with a dry sense of humor.
Yeah, and it's well, number one, I thought it was brilliant because one of the big problems with Facebook/Meta over the years has been cool cachet and their lack of it. Like the only product in their lineup is really Instagram in terms of something you would consider cool and is cutting edge and still has the youth engaged and the celebrities engaged. And so they, you know, I've always wondered why they didn't lean more into their power and their pocketbook, you know, to just get people, celebrities, to be marketing faces for them. And this is, I think they finally did it. This was their big play. What was interesting to me was the naming thing we just mentioned. Every celebrity, when you interact with them as a chatbot, you're not interacting with Snoop Dogg on screen. You're not interacting with Tom Brady. Each person not only has, and I think Kendall Jenner is like, her backstory is she's a PR person from New York who likes cocktails at lunch or whatever. Every person has a different name and a background story, but they're using right. the image of the celebrity. And I think it's an extremely clever way to get around this notion of how do we use celebrity, but that celebrity not give up the rights to their image and their branding. Do you know what I mean?
It's kind of like, yeah, no, I think it's great. I also think it's kind of funny, you know, because it's like an AI alter ego, and whoever came up with the idea is obviously super smart. I just think it's awesome. I can't wait to see it. In action.
I mean, but do you think this is the way, as they say in, what was it, The Mandalorian? Is this the way to kind of like really mainstream AI chatbots? Or is this kind of like...
It's definitely one of the ways, as long as there's a good use case for using them. I still don't understand how you're going to use the chatbot. Like it's in Messenger built in or WhatsApp and it's there. What are you going to use it for? I still don't even use the WhatsApp AI bot much. Do you?
No, I'm just not a fan of WhatsApp in general. I have it, you know, because there are some people who just, you know, they use it. So I'm required, like I have to like be connected.
Yeah. So like, I don't know what I would use it for, but if they have a good use case for it, then definitely. Like if it pairs well with the glasses and, you know, that sort of thing, then I could find some interest in it. But we'll see. When is it coming out? Do you know?
I don't know about the chatbots. I'm not really a big, like in terms of release date, I don't know what the release date is, but I'm just not a big Facebook guy. I kind of checked out on Facebook many years ago, which is weird since I'm a hardcore Facebook VR user and I have the glasses and I do use Instagram. Yeah. I'm not definitely not the target market, and pretty much none of those celebrities except maybe Israel Adesanya mean anything.
Looks like it's going to be available beginning Wednesday in the US. What? No, that doesn't make sense. That's a Meta AI chatbot. No, I want to know when like the Tom Brady is coming up.
Wait. That makes me think about, so just random aside, speaking of celebrities and the intersection with AI, a song recently came out talking, basically it's a reference to the relationship between Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce, football player for the Kansas City Chiefs, I believe. And basically the song is almost predictive that they'll break up. It's like a predictive song of their breakup, and it's kind of like the post-breakup between these two. We don't actually know if they're together. This is all, it could just be a PR stunt. But I had a chance to listen to it. I know you had a chance to listen to it. I feel like this is kind of like the beginning of the new era of AI memes, but not necessarily a visual.
You stole my heart, you intercepted it. Now you're gone, have to accept it. Did I meet your mom too soon? Or did I do what I always do? Yeah, we made it to the 50, and then you kissed me. We made it to the 40, a new love story. We made it to the 30, and you did me dirty right then. You put the ending tight end.
No, I think the song's amazing. Like, in terms of, it sounds just like Taylor Swift. So, and it sounds like something she'd write. It's very funny that they would do that. I don't know what to say. I can understand why artists and celebrities and, you know, rights holders are concerned about AI. I get it. Like, when you hear stuff like that, there was another song that came out that was a rap song by some no-name guy that had Kanye West as a hook in the song, and it was on Spotify, and I think it still is. And it's incredible. Like, it's really wild. And I don't know if it's actually AI, because it sounds like Kanye singing like a whole verse on it. And I've never heard of this rapper before, but I think because I've never heard of it and no one's talking about this song, it has to be AI, but it's just incredible how good it is.
Yeah. The Taylor Swift song doesn't have a title. It just references like the predicted breakup between her and the football player. But apparently it has 6 million or so views on TikTok, decent number of views on YouTube. This is the new face of memes. Like, it's not necessarily a graphic or a visual. It's an idea that has cultural currency. So I just thought that was fascinating. The Kanye thing, I think we're going to see more of that. I'm surprised there's not, I don't know if you follow rap beef, but I'm surprised there's not already like some sort of AI clapback, the Joe Budden diss of the new Drake album. I don't know if you didn't follow that.
No, I didn't follow that.
Okay, that turned into a whole thing because Joe Budden criticized the new album, and Drake, something very rare for Drake, devoted like an entire long paragraph on Instagram, basically telling Joe Budden that he was like a failure in rap. So I'm surprised there's not something in AI for that, but stay tuned. Maybe that'll be coming. Finally, to wrap up, I wanted to talk about something I think more close to your heart, which is AI and video generation. At the recent Adobe Max conference, they unveiled something called Project Fast Frame. What is it? What's the name? Project Fast Fill. And basically, it's very similar to what Adobe is doing with Adobe Photoshop with Firefly, whereby you can take an image and then just kind of like generatively fill out the frame. What this does is the same thing, but for video. And it was an amazing demonstration on stage, because what they did was they did the normal thing you'd see for Firefly. And I think a lot of people were kind of like sitting there like, yeah, bro, we already know about this. And then he like hit play, and the video began to play with this new, like, the new background. And it was just, I mean, Adobe is moving incredibly fast. And there's talk that maybe they'll embed this into products like Premiere, Adobe After Effects. So did you get a chance to see the demo?
Yeah,
what do you think? Give me implications. Yeah. I know this is kind of like what you're working on with.
Somewhat. It is in many ways, but I think it's interesting. I think, it still is a version of diffusion. The quality is actually really good, and how quick it is. But the idea that you can, take a short clip and add like make a change, like make somebody wear a tie or whatever, and then have it kind of, you know, change. It's pretty cool for editing clips. You know, the other one that got me was the coffee. They made a latte with a pattern on it, and they changed the pattern on the latte, and you could still see the, you know, the sort of coffee moving. It was interesting. I would say that, you know, what we're doing is kind of like next level. I almost feel like we're trying to land on Mars sometimes. And I always have to ask, you know, sit down with David and just talk to him. Like, are we trying to accomplish too much sometimes? And it's like every time I ask that question, we continue to make progress, and we've been making progress every day. You know, there's nobody out there creating, like generating video and doing video prediction and, you know, high quality with full 3D understanding. This is the kind of stuff that we're working on. It's very complicated, but if Adobe is doing that, this is going to be like that on crack. And when people see it, I think they're going to understand where you can use this tech in meaningful ways. So I was very impressed with the Adobe demo. You know, it shows what's possible for editors, you know, editing video and making changes in video. It's pretty cool. And I can't wait to reveal what we're doing.
Cool. This is making me think, I didn't plan on bringing this up, but it makes me think about everything going on in Hollywood. We didn't get a chance to really talk about this. I don't think on the pod, where the Writers Guild of America finally settled their contract skirmish and negotiation, right, and they're no longer on strike. So the Directors Guild of America, they have their contract. Now the Writers Guild, they have their contract and their various protections with regard to AI. But now the Screen Actors Guild is still on strike. And at least one of their issues is related to AI. And I was just kind of thinking, like, if I'm thinking about a director, meaning kind of like the creative curator, the person who, you know, essentially the showrunner slash director, the person who constructs everything, that's one role. That person has a lot of leverage. If I think about the writer, the person who, you know, yeah, we have generative AI writing, but, you know, at least in my opinion as a writer, a lot of it is derivative of what's already out there, and truly new ideas and innovations in terms of how we think about the world often come from brilliant writers. With actors, particularly some actors who maybe are not on the higher levels, I'm wondering if they have as much leverage as the writers and directors. And maybe is that not being borne out by the fact that they're still kind of like being, you know, forced to strike? I mean, are you following this at all? Do you have any kind of like updated opinion based on kind of
I haven't followed it since the original writer strike, to be honest. So no, I just there's just so much going on right now that that's the last thing that I'm looking at the moment, I guess. Well, you could say. I don't really have an opinion on it.
Well, in terms of Hollywood in general, I think I asked this of our last guest, I'll ask you. How would you talk someone off the not the ledge? That's a bad phrase.
Yeah, no. I already have. I've had many of these conversations, and the conversation starts by saying, "Listen, you cannot uninvent AI, right? You just can't. It's out there. It's happening. Now you can either embrace it or you can try and fight it. You're not going to win the fight, no matter what. It's going to happen, and it's going to happen with, you know, companies who don't care. You know, they're using open source models and they're building whatever they want and it's out there. Or you can embrace it and partner with companies who do care, who are building really top quality, you know, solutions, and it can allow you an opportunity to monetize your work in the way that, you know, works for you. And that's your choice, right? Your choice is you either work with it or you don't. And if you don't, the models that are run overseas and, you know, with companies that don't worry about US laws and IP protection and stuff like that are just going to do whatever the hell they want. And that's why we're seeing all this music and all this stuff come out the way we're seeing it, because, you know, these are open source models that are being created by whoever. Nobody knows.
I think that's the key, what you just said. Yeah. Like if we were to, again, to refer back to that pause letter, that call to pause, that just doesn't work, because if you were to pause, or if you were to, I don't know, somehow put the brakes on for a couple of years here in the US on AI, there are other actors around the world that would simply use that time to get better, create better products and move forward. So, you know, the genie's out of the bottle, you know, Pandora's box is open. And now it's just a matter of, I guess, how we deal with it and harness it, you know, in the best way possible.
Exactly. Yeah. Like you can't, you know, you can't sue your way out of this problem. You have to find a way to, you know, to not be left in the past with the dinosaurs, I guess. So
there you go. All right. Well, with that, I'll let that be the last word. This has been the 100 Year Podcast. You can check out previous episodes at 100year.com. Check out our newsletter at 100year.substack.com. Do you want to give your socials? Like just, well, we put yeah, your just, stuff you on the screen.
You can just find me at Rahul Sood on Twitter. And that's probably the best place to find me.
And Irreverent Labs.
Yeah, the company is at Irreverent Labs on Twitter, you'll see more about what we're doing in the in the coming months. We'll let the world know.
Awesome! Thanks again for listening and watching, everyone. Please subscribe, like and subscribe is free, so please do it when you can, if you can, and we will see you next time.